I don't think an exchange created Slurf. I do think that the destruction of the contributions as a marketing strategy is plausible.
You think that's plausible? You think $10 million burn is a plausible marketing strategy?
Yes.
Not a dividend.
It's a tale of two quan.
Now, your losses are on someone else's balance sheet.
Generally speaking, airdrops are kind of pointless anyways.
Unnamed trading firms who are very involved.
I like that ETH is the ultimate possible.
DeFi protocols are the antidote to this problem.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Chopping Block. Every couple of weeks, let's get together and give the industry insider's perspective on the crypto topics of the day. So quick intros. First, we've got Tom, the DeFi maven and master of memes.
Hello, everyone.
Next, we've got Robert, the crypto connoisseur and czar of Superstate.
Good morning.
Then we've got Tarun, the Giga Brain and Grand Poobah at Gauntlet.
Yo, what's up?
And finally, I'm Haseeb, the head hype man at Dragonfly. So we are early stage investors in crypto, but I want to caveat that nothing we say here is investment advice, legal advice, or even life advice. Please see choppingblock.xyz for more disclosures. So bull market in full force, although we had a little bit of retracement today. It seems like Bitcoin's back at 64 or something? 63?
62.5.
62.5, yeah. So it kind of pulled back a little bit, very disappointing. We kind of went all the way to 70K, Solana top 200. So a lot of really strong bull market vibes that we're getting here. But things are kind of flailing around quite a bit, which is, I think, pretty standard for a market that's this wild. So did you guys hear the Laura Shin interview with Kyle?
I have it bookmarked. It's like one of these like things I'm really, 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 really excited for. I was actually... You know, when I first saw that it was announced, I was like, oh no, Laura, what are you doing? Like, he's a terrible person. Like, why are you interviewing him? But the response that I've seen on Twitter and online has just been like really impressed with the quality of her interview and the fact that she asked hard hitting questions. And so like, you know, when I get, you know, a free moment, like I'm really looking forward to watching.
All right. Well, if you guys haven't seen it, we can circle back when you guys actually.
I'm actually very afraid to listen to it just more because honestly, just even the clips just sound like listening to a psychopath. I don't know. It's like a little too like disturbing. I feel like I'm like a person who hates watching horror movies, and like, you know, this feels like you're like trying to go see like a horror movie. It's like I don't know. Somehow I have that feeling about it.
It was pretty painful. Funny enough, I listened to the Don Lemon interview, like right after I listened to the Don Lemon interview of Elon Musk, right after I listened to the Kyle interview, which were both painful listens, but in different ways. Anyway, all right, cool. So let's talk about Solana. So Solana, as we have mentioned many times now, meme coin frenzy, and there's this new trend on Solana of, I guess, what are called pre-sale tokens. So pre-sale tokens, basically, they seem to be like basically ICOs, but whatever, they have a name, then the name is pre-sale tokens.
They're 100% ICOs, 100%.
Well, they're ICOs without the contract.
They're worse ICOs, yeah. They're worse versions of ICOs, okay? So here's it. So normally in an ICO, so you remember this is the 2017 vintage, kind of a flavor of the week at that time. So in a normal ICO, you send money to a contract, and the contract essentially ensures that you will receive some amount of tokens based on the total amount that's raised. And that was, you know, more or less sensible forms of fundraising that you can imagine that eventually were deemed to be not okay by the SEC. Okay, so now what is a pre-sale token? A pre-sale token is you decide that you're going to launch a meme coin and you tell people, send money to my address, and then later I will send you some meme coins. But there is no... there's no enforceability of like, I sent you the stuff and you send me the stuff. It's kind of just like, bro, trust me, send me a shitload of money and I will send you some amount of meme coins. And there's like multipliers often. So if you like retweet the original tweet, then they'll give you more tokens. If you drop your address, you get more tokens. So it's all very, it requires not even writing a smart contract at this point to launch a meme coin. You just need some Twitter game. Essentially, to get off the ground.
To be fair, Ethereum, the greatest ICO, was also a trust me, bro, send me some Bitcoin and it will send you some Ether or whatever the.
But that was cross chain. That was cross chain. So I'm going to give them a break on that. But when you're intra chain, I feel like, come on, dude, this is why we invented these things.
Yes.
Is to allow contracts without trust, right?
Ethereum was also before smart contracts existed. They raised the funds.
Great point.
To create EVM and contracts in the first place so that nobody would ever have to do that again.
There are a lot of things that devs and I think ICO participants should be doing that they're not doing. And I just feel like, you know, not having smart contracts is just one more step. You know, it's just incremental. Hey,
Vitalik died for our sins. He did the first Trust Me Bro ICO so that we don't have to. But here we are, full circle. So there's been over $100 million sent to various meme coin pre-sales over the weekend. The most notable of them is this meme coin called Slurf.
Slurf.
Robert, are you a proud Slurf holder?
No, I haven't bought any of these horrible.
Well, Robert, however, is the degen lore master of this podcast, as we've learned over time.
Yes.
So maybe we should get him to give us.
Let's circle around the fire and let Uncle Robert tell us about the story of Slurf.
Okay, so Slurf originated, like many of these pre-sale tokens do, with everybody sending their money to a random stranger on Twitter who simply posts a Solana address and says, send me all your money, trust me, bro. And clearly there was some preparation and foresight that went into this. Slurf had a website that had a ugly picture of a sloth, hence the name Slurf. It's like a mispronunciation of sloth. And it was a relatively well-built website. It had a couple cool innovative features that probably took a couple hours to build. Like there was a pie chart that showed the top contributions by sender. Things that went beyond what these average, you know, tweet fundraisers that people spin up with zero preparation in 30 seconds generally hold. Slurf raised about $10 million with a somewhat, you know, cartoonish website, and all appeared well. A short time later, the Slurf developer, and I don't have his name on the top of my hand, but the Slurf developer announced something along the lines of, I'm terribly sorry, I messed up big. I took all the money from all of the pre-sale contributions and I locked it in an LP contract and burned the entire LP contract and the entire supply. Now, normally what happens in these pre-sales is the developer creates an LP token with the money and some tokens and then gives the rest of the tokens to the pre-sale contributors. In this case, he put all of the tokens into the buy-buy bin and the entire supply of Slurf was locked in this LP token of which he didn't own anymore. And so there was a market, the entire supply of Slurf and the original financial contributions in Sol were all locked in this liquidity pool, which was an AMM. And he announced that he messed up. I think it was like, you know, he cursed or said something, you know, to that effect. And everybody made fun of him. A short time later, trading volume in Slurf exploded. It was rapidly listed on Binance after hitting a $700 million market cap in a matter of hours. And at this point, there was a public analysis and investigation of the situation. A couple really interesting details have come out. And I only know this because I listened to a Twitter space. I don't have deep personal firsthand.
How are you this deep in this?
Research on this?
No, don't you have a job?
I do, but gather around the campfire so we can discuss like the true story.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
His job is being entertaining for this podcast. So I don't know what
you're
saying.
That is true. All right. Correct. I apologize.
Part of my job is being with it, Haseeb.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. So people came to the realization by doing some on-chain analysis that this Slurf developer actually rugged his own pre-sale immediately before vaporizing all the funds. So the Slurf developer was one of the first contributors to this pre-sale. He put 1,000 Sol into the pre-sale of his own money and used this to build confidence. And then immediately prior to the Slurf token being deployed and the pre-sale contributions being locked forever, he actually rescinded his own contribution and took his 1,000 Sol back. And this led many people to the expectation that this was a very premeditated event, that in reality, this was marketing. It was something new and innovative to cut through the noise of all of these cookie cutter pre-sales. And there's a widespread expectation, which I'm personally a believer in, that this was a non-accidental set of circumstances.
So there's a conspiracy theory about the meme coin.
That's correct.
It was $10 million, correct? $10 million that was burned.
$10
million. $10 million of Sol.
Correct.
I believe Robert also overheard another conspiracy theory about the source of the...
Oh, there's more. Oh, good. Let's hear it.
I also overheard another conspiracy theory. And this one, I put at a lower probability. But the other conspiracy theory was that a lot of these pre-sale tokens are actually being created by offshore exchanges that are looking to build trading volume in new assets and build up excitement. You know, this conspiracy theory comes from the fact that a lot of these tokens have been listed so quickly on these exchanges that it's led some people to believe that there's a relationship between the exchanges listing them almost instantaneously and the development of some of these assets. But I don't have any evidence there.
It just feels a little bit like the 2020, 2021 era where like some of the tokens were a little too close to exchange operators, as we learned in hindsight. And somehow the fact that these got listed really quickly, and then also, I don't know if you saw Justin Sun said, Wobi, HTX is donating all the fees to cover the, like, there was just so much that was done by the centralized exchange world around it that it's hard to believe it was organic, you know?
All right. I look, I'm not going to take a view either way. It would make sense in principle for a decentralized exchange to do it, but the fact that they got listed on Binance immediately, like Binance is not manufacturing meme coins. Like they make so much money doing all their normal stuff.
Well, it might not have been them. It might
I could see a long tail exchange
lower down doing it, and then it just like went up quickly. Like
versus, yeah, but
like,
I mean,
new DeFi protocol burning, doesn't get listed quickly.
Burning $10 million is not. That is not a good way to do anything.
Well, like, that might have
surely
been
a there's a better
ROI. That, like, that might have.
Yeah, been yeah, yeah. Well, that's the core conspiracy, isn't it?
Well, the core
what
conspiracy,
else is manufactured here?
Yeah, I don't think an exchange created Slurf. I do think that the destruction of the contributions as a marketing strategy is plausible.
You think that's plausible? You think $10 million, $10 million burn is a plausible marketing strategy?
Yes.
I think $10 million is like a great take. For a stable, for a meme coin, I think. Well, so I mean, the other thing that I learned recently, I was chatting with somebody who was talking about meme coin fair launches, and there was some meme coin that was fair launched, and they were like, "Yeah, you know, I'm part of this meme coin team, and we did a fair launch, and it's doing really well. So, you know, I'm going to donate my share." And I'm like, "Wait, but I thought you just said it was a fair launch. How's their share?" And they were like, "Oh no. It's a fair launch, but like in meme coins, fair launches are different. A fair launch in a meme coin just means that there's no VCs." And I'm like, how is that? What about that is fair that there's no VCs, therefore it's fair? And then I looked it up, and I there was like an article in CoinGecko, because I don't know, meme coins, I guess, all culture, so it, you know, doesn't live document anywhere. But there was an article written by CoinGecko that talked about what fair launches were. And I was like, all right, I was going to show this to them and be like, yo, fuck, this is not a fair launch. And there was a sentence there that said, for meme coins, fair launches often refer to that there's no VC allocation, which is insane to me. Like just the bastardization of terminology. Fair launch used to mean literally like Satoshi style launch. Everybody gets on equal terms. There's no, you know, dev allocation. And now it just means no VCs, which I'm like, what VCs are even investing into meme coins? What does it even mean, no VC allocation? What VCs are doing these?
Yeah, that's definitely marketing to attract participants.
To be fair, I think I heard rumor that there's a round going around for DGEN, the Farcaster meme coin that VCs are looking at.
That wasn't a rumor. That was announced on. Yeah. That was.
Oh,
that
okay. Was never mind. There you
that
go.
That was a real round.
Okay. Who's doing that round?
Not fair launch.
I think it was one confirmation. I think it was one confirmation. Yes, it's on.
It was
the
one confirmation. Oh, geez.
Filthy what? VC coin. Don't want that.
Did you get the pitch? What is a meme coin pitch? I want to know.
I don't think meme coin founders talk to me. They launch before.
Yeah, meme coin founders do. They pass us over. We're not cool enough for the meme coin teams.
I mean, the pitch has got to be like, we're going to make good vibes and somehow make the meme coin go up. Like,
I think the pitch is that we are going to take funds and burn them as a publicity stunt, and that's how we're gonna take off, and then we're gonna take donations from exchanges. That would be pretty next level. Yeah. I feel like every time we talk about meme coins, I get dumber and dumber.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. you're like spending your whole day on this stuff, dude. What are you talking about?
I spent like 9 minutes listening to the slur.
Really? You spent 9 minutes and you got all of that in 9 minutes out of a Twitter space?
Of course. They covered the base really quickly.
Okay. So the meme coin teams are very to the point, very efficient with their communication. Okay. Well, damn. Well, we're at a point now where, so Solana is now at this point, I mean, it's a meme coin chain at this point, like almost all the activity on Solana is meme coin trading. The ETH and Solana volume are basically on par at this point, if you look at DEX volumes. So I'm just looking at DeFi Llama right now. It actually looks like 24-hour volume Solana is actually higher than Ethereum, although Ethereum is higher on 7-day. But Solana has basically flipped Ethereum for total volume.
I mean, also Solana flipped Bitcoin in transaction fees recently, which is a very
but still
big
below, but still below Ethereum.
Still below Ethereum, but it's like a big accomplishment given their level of fees.
So really dramatic. I guess the question is like, I mean, how long do you guys think that this meme coin mania is going to persist? I mean, it's already at the point where Solana UX is very degraded. Where, you know, I was talking with some folks who are telling me like 50% of transactions are dropping now on Solana. That's how just crazy the activity on the chain is.
Yeah, I mean, I saw, you know, people are obviously critiquing the UX right now of Solana and totally, you know, tweeted a video of him doing a transaction, you know, and he was like, look, guys, it still works. And it took like 40 seconds to confirm a transaction. And I was like, okay, well, it's definitely still works. But, you know, they just spun around for like a 40-second clip.
Yeah. People are setting like insane slippage limits. Like I saw people talking on Twitter, like, oh, you got to set your slippage like 50% so your trade goes through. And it's just like, what? You know, yeah. Anything. I will fill my slurf at any price. That's how badly you want it.
Who knows what the price, the fair value of slurf is? You know, you never know.
I wish we could do like anonymous interviews of like people who try to ape into these pre-sale things. I just want to hear their stories, you know? Like I really want like the real talk, like the real housewives of imagine a reality TV show, like, you know, like the Real Housewives TV show, but for like anon degens who send money into Solana. I would watch. At least it would be good as a podcast. Maybe there's nothing to see visually.
I think we're overthinking this. You know, I have a friend of mine's younger brother who's much younger than me, and this person was lamenting the fact that they didn't ape some pre-sale Solana meme coin, and all of his friends did, and all of his friends made like $500,000 off of like $1,000. And he felt like, you know, a fool because he didn't participate. Now all of his young peer friends are suddenly rich and he's not. And I think the people that are participating in this are basically just like yeeting their savings into these opportunities and hoping for the best. And like, because they've been working out, you know, Book of Meme and all of these like tokens that have come out of nowhere. I mean, Slurf even, you know, people are feeling like it's a positive sum game when in the long run, it's probably not, but in the short term, it feels like it.
I think whenever a new meta gets discovered, the move is just, you know, exploit it as much as possible until it becomes tired. It's kind of like doing every NFT mint in like early 2021, also probably a great idea. Doing every ICO in like early 2017, also probably a great idea. And then when it becomes sort of played out and oversaturated, then they have to exit. But the question is just like, you know, when is it a new meta versus a weird one-off thing? You know, when is it over? That's always kind of the trick.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's transition away from the excitement of Solana to the boring old Ethereum, which just shipped the long vaunted upgrade of Ethereum 4844, also known as the Denkun upgrade, which enabled blob storage. So we talked about it a little bit last time on the show. I'm sure most of our listeners fell asleep. Well, it's live now and L2 fees are super low. So now, you know, most L2s, I believe the fees are average fees are something like, you know, point or not point, 1 cent to send ETH and maybe a couple cents, a few cents to swap. So fees are incredibly low now on L2s. They're sort of not quite Solana level of fractions of a cent, but low enough to the point where these things are basically, you know, almost as good for most people as using some of the alt L1s that had significantly lower fees. So There's been basically almost all the major rollups now have adopted blob storage. There was a lot of speculation that maybe blob storage was going to be more expensive than originally anticipated. And that, okay, in the very beginning, maybe the first couple days or the first week, it was going to be relatively low. But it's been about a week now, and it seems like the demand on blob storage is actually fairly limited. And so we are seeing, at least for the moment, even with all these rollups, now using blob storage. And obviously, there are some rollups that are on Celestia and using external DA. But the ones that are using blob storage or the blob stream of Ethereum, the fees are maintained as being pretty low. So I guess first question to you guys, one, do you think that these fees for blob storage persist, or do you think that people are going to find a way to do more stuff on blobs and drive up the fees?
Well, I think eventually people are going to find ways to do more stuff with blobs. Like people will do things to take up a lot more storage.
There are already blob inscriptions, by the way, that people have made, for instance.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Give it like 3 weeks and there's some like blob storage video game that just like uses like a ton of, you know, blob. But like, I think like those use cases are slower than like the L2s being like, oh, we can put more transactions in, like, hooray, like costs go down.
Yeah, I think people kind of kept citing this, you know, induced demand LA highway kind of meme where it's, you know, this sort of misconception, I think particularly in LA, that's like, if you have a highway that's super congested, you add one new lane and people think that's going to fix traffic. But of course, like eventually the market renormalizes and people see that and maybe there's reduced traffic for a period of time and then more people drive and then it kind of gets back to square one. And I think we'll see a little bit of that with blob storage, but it is a little bit of a paradox because, you know, even though, yeah, like, you know, there is induced demand and it will sort of maybe renormalize at some sort of market clearing price, which is probably similar to what it was before, you do have greater throughput, right? Like all else equal, it's better to have more storage for call data because you're just processing more transactions, you know, on these L2s than kind of what we had before. Similarly, like even if the highway is still the same, you know, as slow as it was before, if you have five lanes instead of two lanes, you are technically moving more cars, but you haven't, you know, solved traffic, quote unquote.
Tarun, as the resident game theory expert, what's your view here? Where are we going with blob storage costs?
I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, one interesting thing you saw was, you know, teams, L2 teams that were posting, I mean, some of them completely fell over on the upgrade, like Blast, and needed to get a lot of fixes. Some of them optimized how much they were posting over time because they realized they were overposting, like Starkware. And then some people took a bit more time to see how the market developed before launching, like Arbitrum, which, you know, I think was probably the kind of most safe approach that we've seen. But I think what people have realized is like L2 teams have a lot of incentive to optimize how much they're writing. I also think it's a good time to have launched because of how much demand has been taken away via Solana. It's just like, it just means that like a lot of the kind of very dumb spam transaction type of stuff wasn't there during launch. Like there really weren't. Like imagine if Slurf launched at the same time as 4844. I guarantee you we would have seen some sort of like very dumb thing like, hey, we're using blob storage, send money to this wallet and it'll buy blobs and those blobs will be, you know, like somehow a future token. It kind of like the inscriptions. Like what I mean is like people would basically make some inscription like thing and like try to do sell like it.
BRC20s on Blobstream.
Yeah, exactly. But I think because Solana seems to own that market and has completely, at this point you could argue.
Wait, how would you describe, how would you reify that market? Is that like stupid things
on a
blockchain?
Well, I think the meme coin market for new meme coins that are either tokens or promises of future tokens, I think if you look at the L2s, they've all been trying to have these meme coin economies, whether it's AVAX, Arbitrum, or I'm trying to think who else actually has been like really base a little bit. And I just like, you look at the volumes, you look at the usage, it's not even coming close to where Solana is, right? So Solana is clearly remember when there was Pepe Mania? All that type of user seems to just completely have gone. Like, I feel like Whiff was the moment, like dog with hat, that all those users were like, actually, we're going to move. And it doesn't seem like they're coming back. And I think that's actually good for Ethereum for launching this, because you don't have that type of like crazy spam and you can have this thing grow a little more slowly. But the long-term outlook on it...
That's kind of true. But if you look at the biggest meme coins, I mean, SHIB is right behind Dogecoin. Dogecoin is its own chain. Shiba Inu is on Ethereum. What's next? I think Pepe is next. Let me see here.
Whiff is right below Pepe, though. Like, they were very close. Like, in the peak last few weeks, they're very close. My point, though, if you look at the long tail, there's, like, none that... Like, the Ethereum...
Yeah, the long tail is all... Floki is on Ethereum? Where's Floki?
I believe so. But these are all the boomer dog coins, you know? This is
They are the biggest, right? The only one in the top 50.
They're the biggest, but they don't have, like, the on-chain transaction volume generated by them is not as high right now, right? Like, they have a ton of centralized trading. They have, but, like...
I think in aggregate,
And I think for the new issuances, I just don't feel like you're seeing... Like, even on Base, right? There are, like, a ton of these random small meme coins launched, a ton of, like, Brian Armstrong, like, misspelling meme coins, but, like, none of them really, like, got anywhere near the kind of Bowden or Trump type of things, like, in terms of, like, the frenzy, in terms of usage. So I would say, like, Ethereum's probably lost this market for a while. Maybe it'll come back, maybe not. I'm not sure it's, like, necessarily the market you always want to own, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I suppose the difference is that, you know, although Ethereum does host more market cap of meme coins, it's mostly traded on centralized exchanges. It's not settled on chain. Whereas on Solana, the number one place for price discovery of these things and trading is actually on Solana itself. Do you notice that actually, is that literally true that there's more of this stuff traded on chain for like Whiff, that there's more trade on chain than on Binance?
It feels true. I bet we could check these numbers in like 4 seconds.
Okay, let's check these numbers in 4 seconds. Let's check, right? I'm gonna look at Whiff, and then I'm gonna look at Slurf. I'm gonna pull up Slurf.
Slurf has got to be on chain.
Slurf was weird though, because like I said, the listing was like
Slurf is like, number one venue is Radium. Number one venue is Radium for Slurf.
Whiff is
only graduate. Yeah, Whiff
is you graduate.
Finance.
Whiff is Binance. Like it does happen, but I think that the launching aspect, the like ICO like aspect, it does feel like Solana's won that pretty.
Yeah. So look, so for Whiff, Radium does 29 million of volume a day. Binance does 320 million of volume a day. So I think for like once an asset gets out of that very initial critical period, then it does graduate to centralized exchanges, I think, pretty much regardless of its scale.
I'm just saying if you look at,
it's like the stuff that was on what was that website you showed last time that was like
pump.fun.
Yeah, I feel like the pump.fun stuff, like everything that's sort of in the meme coin carousel of like the first second day of birth, that's what is primarily being traded on Solana.
I'm just saying that like in 2021 when SHIB happened, that was on Ethereum. Right, that it feels like that entire market has shifted.
No, it is totally. I mean, the new generation of coins 100% has shifted, and I think the on chain activity for meme coins has definitely shifted to Solana.
It's absolutely a shifted to Solana.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to MakerDAO. So again, we're sort of moving from very exciting to moderately boring, and now to extremely boring. So let's talk about MakerDAO. So MakerDAO, you know it, you love it. It's, the biggest decentralized stablecoin, been around forever. Caveat, we're investors in Maker MKR token since a very long time. So MakerDAO has announced that they are going into the end game. And the end game has now been defined much more clearly than previously. I think previously it was kind of a word salad of various things that Arun has been saying that they're going to do. But now it's going to get a lot more definition. So what's going to happen? Supposedly in summer 2024, there's going to be basically rebrandings of a new stable token, which will be replacing DAI. You can transfer from DAI into the new stable token. With the new stable token, you'll be able to farm the new governance token. And the new governance token, all these names are obviously TBD. This new governance token, you can convert from MKR to the new governance token at 24,000 to one, lower price, more retail friendly. I see where they're going with this. So there's going to be farming, DeFi mechanics, Bazoom, you know, it's very, very much almost like DeFi 2.0 type mechanics that they're kind of throwing into MakerDAO, it feels like. Second, more sub-DAOs. There's going to be a new chain. That new chain is going to host new stuff. I don't know. I didn't, honestly, I don't follow all the stuff here. I should have spent more time reading it. But there's going to be farming. There's going to be a new chain. There's going to be tokens. Everyone is excited. Maker prices up. I don't know. Reflections on where MakerDAO is going with this new endgame.
I feel like Rune was like possessed by the ghost of Andre or Sifu. And it's kind of like you said, it feels like very not makery and kind of very, oh, these are all the things that kind of more, you know, degen-y DeFi founders would do, like the rebranding, the unit cost bias reduction, the new chain, the farming. Like, it, in some ways, it's very exciting because Maker has been so boring for so long. But it worries me a little bit because I think part of the boringness is also why Maker has this brand. And I mean, frankly, DAI is still maybe the only decentralized stablecoin that people actually use as a quote currency. They actually use it for payments. And I think that's, you know, in large part attributable because it is so stable. And that was, you know, part of what people got upset about last week when they were jacking up the rates, which was very out of character for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the goal, if I were to phrase it really simply, is Maker wants to transform from being DAI and the system around it to being a brand that has every type of project all in one place. And, you know, I've seen a number of, you know, attempts at this over the years where there's like projects that are like, oh, we're going to do everything. We're going to have lending and AMMs and a chain and a this and a that. And it's like, and they like go through like the list and they check every single one off, you know, and it's like, we're going to do it all. And like, my biggest concern is that like Maker turns into like a sushi and, you know, completely dilutes what originally made Maker special. Now, that being said, obviously, everyone's really excited about this because it's like, oh, we go from having one project to having seven projects. Hooray.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like there's definitely an embrace of token mechanics and sort of cryptoification, let's say, of Maker. Maker so far has been pretty staid, kind of this sort of august protocol that sits in the wings and, you know, never really enters into the popular attention unless it jacks up rates or, you know, something like that. Was that, that is what we think of as a scandal in Maker, is that, wow, the rates went up too hot, too fast. But this seems like Maker very much embracing a kind of new generation of, oh, hey, we're back in a bull market. Like, it's time to start mixing things up and being, you know, it's kind of like when, I don't know, when like, you know, 3M hires a social media guy and they start being like, you know, subtweeting people and dropping in the comments and roasting other brands. I kind of feel like that's where Maker, that's kind of a little bit what Maker wants to be. And like, look, maybe it's a good idea. I'm not totally sure. I don't have a super strong opinion for this stuff that doesn't seem to really affect the underlying mechanics of Maker itself.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that, you know, how do you do, fellow kids? Type meme where, you know, Maker is very quickly reinventing itself to go from being a very mature project to being a new project.
Do you think it's net good or net bad?
My hunch, net bad. Simply because I think if Maker were to put all of its efforts and like triple down on the stablecoin DAI and the systems around it, I think they have an opportunity to grow. I think they have an opportunity to build something really more special than they already have, and it's already special. And so, you know, I just don't necessarily immediately appreciate the sort of like distraction of like do eight things when you have one thing that's like almost working and they can triple down on that one thing that's like almost at like real scale.
Tom, what's your take? Net good, net bad?
I think a mix of both. I think the rebrand, I mean, we'll see what they come out with. Hopefully it's not bad or cringy, but, you know, at face value, I think it seems like a good idea. I actually kind of like what Maker has been doing with the product spinouts. So like, Oasis, or formerly known as Oasis, is now like Summer, which is now, you know, actually one of the top DeFi apps, and same thing with Spark. It reminds me a little bit of kind of like the Gnosis model done right, of you kind of incubate these products internally, and then when they're mature enough, they have to swim on their own. They have to go find their own funding. They have to go find their own sources of revenue. I think having too much of that stuff in-house kind of coddles the projects, and they don't feel as much pressure to find PMF. There can be, you know, weird conflicting incentives of maybe this is not, you know, the ideal solution for a you know, DeFi aggregator or for a lending market, but it's really good for makers, so we're going to do it anyway. And instead, having these things sort of be have some sort of stake in it, but have it be external, I think ultimately is going to be more beneficial for these things than trying to keep them in-house.
Tarun, what's your take? Maker, net good, net bad.
I don't have too strong a take because I haven't actually spent enough time reading the forum posts, because sometimes they're very long. And like, I feel like I wish I really have been meaning to actually go fine tune a simple model on some DAO forum posts so I can just ask stuff for summaries instead of like reading through the detritus that is the minds of people in crypto, within the minds of people in crypto. And so I find some of the diatribes very hard to distill to simple things oftentimes, because they're like, they go on all these kind of crazy tangents and they're really saying like, we're taking a path from A to B, but instead it takes 10,000 words to say it. And so I've been a little leery for that reason, but it does seem like they're sticking a lot of things into this. I think the spinoffs, to Tom's point, are probably like the best version of this. They have so many of them now, actually, like everything from Chronicle, the Oracle, Ajna, Spark, etc. But I find the kind of crazier side of things too hard to understand, and I try to stay away from that. But I do think like there is a version of this world where like, yeah, the spin-offs are a really good idea. And like arguably the sub-DAO concept is meant to make more of these and to make them efficient, right? Whether that can continue remains to be seen. But yeah, I feel like I agree with Tom. Like that's the part that's like the shining light in all of this.
I think Maker's already done the sub-DAO transition. I think already that's been pretty beneficial. Like you, instead of just getting this, you know, lump sum payment and telling some DAO, hey, go use this for productive purposes, the sub-DAOs have to apply for funding individually. And, you know, some of them get denied. They say, no, like, this is too much budget, or we don't really think you've been effective. You're fired effectively. And so it feels like you're finally applying some market pressure to this part of the market.
I will say one of the upsides to this shakeup is, and I know this is something that Rune has personally been very oriented around, is there have been a lot of bureaucrats in MakerDAO. Like MakerDAO is probably the single most bureaucratic org in crypto, I would say. And a lot of those bureaucrats are just kind of like locked into this like this web of just all the stuff going on within MakerDAO. And so there is something just kind of healthy about shaking things up and kind of just loosening the cobwebs around everything. And yeah, maybe it could be a bit cringe. Maybe like some of it's kind of a no-op, or it just, you know, is a kind of temporary excitement. And then, you know, when you actually see what gets delivered, it's kind of like, well, this is basically just still MakerDAO, just with some, you know, fancier gloss over it. But I think some of that can be useful institutionally. We'll see how it actually plays out, but right now with the token price responding, maybe he's not going to get that much pushback on it, and it'll actually be pretty easy to get this through. But you can imagine if the market was responding in a very different way, that it actually would be more of a struggle to get some of these things implemented. But right now it's bull market. If token go up, people will mostly get out of the way, is my sense. So,
yeah, when one token turns into like seven tokens, people like that.
Always bullish. Always bullish. Yeah. Cool. So speaking of new tokens, so there was a story reported, actually, I think that Robert broke, which is that BlackRock is launching an on-chain fund. So still not a lot of details about what this on-chain fund is. I've heard around the way, so again, this is all kind of shrouded in mystery at the moment, but I've heard from around the way that BlackRock is launching some kind of basically tokenized money market fund. And the idea is that, okay, you've got all these, all these schlubs on chain who are holding stable coins. They're not getting any yield. They should hold a tokenized money market instead, and then they would get yield but still be, you know, dollar pegged effectively, you know, make sure we don't break the buck on the money market. And we're BlackRock, so we should be able to beat all these losers and scale much bigger. So that's what I've heard is what they're doing, but I don't have any firsthand knowledge. This is all kind of around the grapevine. Anybody else have any finer grained detail?
Well, I have a question for Robert. Do you just get up every morning and read the new Reg D filings, or you know, how do you find this stuff?
I mean, don't you?
Well, he's reading the Reg D filings while he's listening to his Twitter Spaces about meme coins.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Like I like multitask like 12 like streams of media at all times, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I feel like the Reg D filings are so much alpha on just like who's doing what, when, and where that like,
wait, is this serious? Like,
yeah, of course.
Oh, do you actually read Reg D filings just like regularly?
You gotta read the Reg D filings.
Well, I mean, a lot of journalists read the Reg D filings. So like, you know, I'm not a journalist, but a lot of journalists read these on a daily basis because they're like,
Robert, how do you have time to like do your job? Don't you like run multiple companies?
You know, this is actually part of his
and
job.
A fund.
This is how you get diligence on other
Reg
funds
D filings,
other vehicles. Yeah, of course. Okay. What are you talking about? All that's right. Like the ultimate way. That's like the old school like hedge fund way.
Yes, that is the very old, very very old school like 1950s.
It's true there are services like that just give you alerts for all this stuff too. So you don't really have to like read.
Yeah,
all
maybe
all
there right. are services and you just put in some keywords and like you know who knows.
Yeah, I've heard of a few of them. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Okay. I'm fascinated. I want to go a little bit deeper before you finish the story. You wake up in the morning, you kiss your wife, you brew your cup of coffee. Like, do you just like literally open up Edgar and just like read?
No, I don't. No, I have like some Google set up. Like, this is not like.
Okay. All right. I wasn't sure how much of this is real because Tom seemed very taken aback and I was like, oh, fuck. Okay.
No, it's not my wake up. Routine.
Okay.
But the Reg D filing was interesting because, you know, there has been a lot of chatter in the market that there was going to be a fund that BlackRock is doing in partnership with Securitize. And it's actually really interesting that the Reg D dropped because it's the first definitive proof to a lot of the rumors that there's something happening, they're gearing up. It's exciting. And, you know, I'm personally really excited by this. I think, you know, seeing huge incumbents getting excited about new product launches on chain, seeing them get excited about tokenization, seeing them get excited about partnerships, seeing them try new things and experimenting. This is great. This is great for the whole industry. This is great for everyone who's a listener. It's awesome. And so, you know, I'm really excited to see, you know, what the product looks like when it goes live. I saw there were some people talking about like, oh, we found the token contract and like, oh, we found the wallet where $100 million was pre-funded to it. You know, I'm not sure which of those is accurate, but when the details come out, I think it's going to be really exciting to see what BlackRock is doing on chain because it's a great milestone. It's huge. It's watching someone that's always, you know, been a little bit of a slow mover embracing the crypto native life. And I think it's going to be inspiring to a lot of other institutions. I think it's going to be inspiring to regulators. I think it's going to be inspiring to investors and, you know, I think people don't appreciate how cool it is.
I'm just waiting for BlackRock to tweet, yo, send USDC to this address, 2x if you 2x if you retweet.
Yeah, BlackRock.soul.
BlackRock.soul. Okay. It's time. I think we're ready. And then BlackRock is like, sorry guys, we lost the keys. we ended up burning all your USDC.
One day. They'll become degens in like 30 years.
I can't believe it. Cool. Well, I think we're unfortunately up on time. We got to wrap early today, but very interesting. Hopefully by next week, we'll have more clarity on this BlackRock thing and see what it actually is and what's happening in the wild. Until then, hope your transaction fees go down and your Solana meme coins go up very heavily. And we'll see you all next week.